Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. I hope you enjoyed our guest last week. It was kind of a different show. Our guest was John Monroe, and he talked about his work with natural vision improvement. Really kind of groundbreaking stuff he's doing there. Apparently, most vision problems can be cured naturally through different types of exercises and methods. So throw away your glasses if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show. It's on archives on BBS Radio website, so check it out, and you can get rid of your glasses forever. But tonight, we're moving into a different direction, something that's more strictly paranormal. Our guest tonight is Stephen Wren. He's a writer, a paranormal investigator, a radio producer, and a respiratory therapist who's quite accomplished. He is the founder of the paranormal investigations group, Tennessee Paranormal. And this group actually conducts free investigations for Tennessee-based homes and business owners who may be experiencing the unexplained. And currently, the group has over 750 members, and in the past 2 years, their website has received more than 1 million hits. Their website is tnparanormal.com. That's all one word, the abbreviation for Tennessee, TN Paranormal. So you can check that out after the show, and there'll be lots of interesting stuff there. But they have investigated many locations, mostly in their state, but also out of their state, and have captured some really incredible evidence, especially in the area of EVP, electronic voice phenomena, which I think is really one of the groundbreaking areas of research into the paranormal and ghosts. So he's also, you know, has been doing healthcare for many, many years, and is also, lucky for us, a writer, and has recently put together a novel, which, let me see, I do have the title here. The first book is called Jeremiah Bloom and the Amulet of Osirin, and it basically combines his knowledge and experience of the paranormal with a swashbuckling story set in the 1700s. And it's slated to be a series of 3 books, actually. And the first one is 332 pages long. It's quite a sizable book and is now available in hardcover and paperback. And so published by Ingram Distributors, and you can get it through Barnes & Nobles and Amazon.com and all the other places. So check it out if you get a chance. And there's also a website for that as well, Jeremiah Bloom, which I will give out later, jeremiahbloom.com. But let's just get to our guest, because he has got lots of interesting stories to tell, Stephen Wren. Stephen, thank you for coming on to the show.
Oh, guys, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so pretty exciting stuff that's been going on with you. How did you get involved in all this stuff?
I mean, piece by piece, actually. I mean, it's started out in healthcare about 12 years ago, and I guess the paranormal part of it, I started out as a skeptic quite a few years back, and
really?
Started out by doing, and I completely agree with your comment a minute ago, EVP being groundbreaking research. I mean, that's just, it's a phenomenal thing, and a very validating thing as far as, you know, trying to prove life after death and, you know, evidence that there are things left behind. But I started out quite a few years back just as a skeptic, heard about EVP and wanted to know for myself if it was actually something that was true or not. And I actually began recording in my own home, as well as various other places. And, you know, the first several attempts turned up unsuccessful, but it wasn't shortly after that the voices started coming through. And not only did I have voices coming through, I started having increased activity in my home, which included doors opening and closing and slamming and the washing machine opened up in the middle of the cycle. We had lights blowing out, my kids seeing things in the house. I mean, it was just,
wow.
For about a year straight, we just had our own haunted house of sorts going on that we were dealing with, you know, and I think most of it stemmed from me recording in my own location, so.
Really? So you really think that all that was a result of your own research into this stuff?
Well, the house was brand new. We had just had it built. There wasn't any, after doing some research on the property, it was in a subdivision. I've since moved from that location, but, we did research on the property. There wasn't anything significant regarding the property. And it, you know, ironically enough, started happening after I was, almost, systematically and obsessively recording EVP every day after the voices started coming in. And I think I just turned myself into like a honing magnet of sorts, just causing all kinds of things to happen in my own house. And when I finally stopped that, within a few months, the activity started slowing down to where it eventually just fizzled out and we didn't have anything going on. But it was during that time when I was seeking help for my own problems that I had caused in my house when I met up with Todd Bates, the host of Haunted Voices Radio, which, hence afterwards, I ended up being his radio producer about a year later. But he and I ended up being really good friends through all this process, and he helped me, come to terms with what was going on. And, I wanted to get a little deeper into it, and that's what, where Tennessee Paranormal eventually came into play, and the group was founded, and we've been actively researching since. So,
wow. So, do you think that like using EVP is comparable to using a Ouija board?
I mean, I've been asked that question many times. Yes and no. I think people that use Ouija boards, EVP. Well, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. Either way, you can attract things being pleasant or unpleasant, no matter what you
right.
do. I don't know if you guys are familiar with The Secret or not. I firmly believe in the philosophy of The Secret that's real popular out there right now. If you will it, it will happen.
Right.
And I think that it kind of is just like that. But, the same thing with, I guess in some respects, yes, a Ouija board and EVP could be classified as the same thing because you are trying to contact those on the other side and have them communicate with you. However, I think a lot of people that use Ouija boards really don't know how to close that door once they open it. I was there myself one time. So, but as far as an aid or a tool when you're doing investigations, I think it's a phenomenal piece of, research data you can use to help verify and validate whether something's at a location or not. Especially when it shows intelligence and answers questions. And, I've been called by name. I've had direct responses to questions. We've had just, phenomenal success with EVPs our group has done. So it's just, I think it's a great thing.
Well, you can get evidence. It's so hard to get evidence of something that's unseen.
Exactly.
Not physical.
Right. Especially when you're at a location, where you've got people that are scared or homeowners, other things like that are asking for your help, and you go in there and you're trying to validate something or debunk something. A lot of times it's something completely explainable. It's not necessarily they have something going on. They might have something going on, but it might not be anything paranormal related at all. But, but it helps in those situations. And there's been numerous places we've been at where there was indeed activity, and we were able to validate some of it with EVP. So it was, we did a home investigation just a couple weeks ago in Kingsport where this, not Kingsport, this was in, I'm drawing a complete blank here. Northwest Tennessee, I can't even think. Oh, Dresden, Tennessee, I'm sorry. We did a couple weeks ago, and this home was built in the mid-1800s. The family got a great deal on it. It had been foreclosed on, and they moved in. There was still belongings from people from back in the 1800s, the late 1800s. There were belongings in the attic from these people, which was completely befuddled then when they moved into the home. But it wasn't shortly after that they started remodeling, and when they started remodeling, it started increasing activity, and they had everything imaginable going on. They had some friend of theirs come over to the house and look at the house, and what they hadn't realized on the outside of the house, on the north, south, east, and west sides of this home, were pentagrams. I think on the north and south side they were turned upwards, and on the east and west they were turned downwards, if my memory serves me right. But and they had everything going on here, and we went out there and we caught nothing on video or photography, but we did capture a couple of EVPs. We were out there, and that's just an example. In some cases, it doesn't matter how active the location is, sometimes you get stuff, sometimes you don't. This time, all we got was two EVPs, but it was enough to validate something was there. You know, so it was, you know, but it's, I think it's an amazing tool.
Well, how do you suppose, I know I'm kind of asking you to speculate a little bit here, but how do you suppose EVP works? How are spirits, if that's who's doing this, able to manipulate this audio tape, and why does it work better than, say, film?
Well, you know, as far as the way EVP works, I think all the different answers out there are theoretical, because we have no solid proof how anything happens. As far as most of the paranormal stuff is related, we base everything on theory and experience. But, you know, I think in some cases, I think they're able to manipulate the energy if they can muster up enough energy to communicate with us, and they embed it on these devices somehow. You know, many times these EVPs we analyze, I use the program Adobe Audition, so that we can see the hertz level these voices come in on. But, right. You know, a lot of times it's below the range of human hearing. So, you know, sometimes you can hear them, sometimes you can't. Most of the ones that we capture, we cannot hear. You know, I've only had a couple clairaudient experiences in the entire time I've been doing this. So, you know, it's, but I think it's their way of manipulating energy that somehow embeds itself in our recording devices. Magnetically, in the case of analog recording, but.
Well, that would make sense.
That's my own opinion of it.
Because ghosts are able to manipulate electromagnetic machinery to a certain extent. I mean, with lights being
right.
A perfect example.
Exactly. Right.
So I guess it's sensitive enough in some way that they can. I just wonder if they're truly non-physical. Where is the bridge between physical and non-physical, and what's the mechanics of it? But that's something, I guess. You know, it's interesting that you're doing this work because you've moved beyond, you know, just the theorizing, and now you're actually doing these experiments and gathering evidence. So.
Right. Yeah, and I noticed on Preston's profile on his website, you know, he's done, in fact, I'm going to get that book he's got on astral projection. I've got numerous books here. I've been trying to do the out-of-body exploring myself actively for about 2 years now. I have not actually been successful. I've had two very close encounters where I had the full, what they refer to as coined as Monroe's vibrations.
Right.
You know,
that's
and I've come to that point. Yeah, and it's, you know, some wonderful stuff out there, and it's, you know, I was hoping to connect in a whole different way, you know, and here lately I've had so much going on, I've kind of gotten out of the habit of doing the meditation and the actively trying to pursue projecting, you know, when I lay down or, you know, at times where I'm free during the day when I can get in a meditative state, but, you know, eventually I intend to, you know, have an out-of-body experience and try to experience some of this, you know, try to, you know, get answers of my own, you know, answers I still have that I want answers to, so, or experiences, you know, it's just the experience of it. It's something that just drives me to make me want to do that.
Right, right. Well, I'm right there with you. You know, I've had a number of out-of-body experiences, actually, so it's pretty easy to do if you just buckle down and do the exercises. And
is there a specific technique you use that you project with?
Well, yes and no. I think it's, for me, I just go through a kind of a routine where I go through sort of three steps. I relax my body completely, usually when falling asleep or just waking up. And then I kind of mentally relax as much as I can because we always have the stream of thoughts going through our head.
Exactly,
and,
right.
You kind of want to just quiet it down as much as you possibly can and not pay too much attention to it. And then what I do is do visualizations and what I call affirmations, where I say, I'm going out of my body, I will go out of my body, I deserve to remember everything that happens to me at night, and all of that, and then I visualize myself going out of body, or visualize myself doing something that causes movement, like being on a swing, or on the bow of a boat, going up and down, and all of this stuff. There's a bunch of stuff you can do.
Yeah, I know there's lots of techniques, and I've tried many of them. The one that has worked best for me is actually, we had a guest on our radio show by the name of William Ballman, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with him.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Ballman, he had a technique in his book about imagining yourself in another room, experiencing yourself in another room where you visualize yourself actually touching objects in the room, walking barefoot across the carpet or the floor, whatever that may be. And that technique has worked better for me than anything else I have tried. And both of my attempts where I had gotten so close, but during the time that I was doing that, my heart, well, what I thought was my heart, I think it was actually my chakra after talking to somebody, but it felt like it was about to beat out of my chest. I don't know if you've had that sensation or not. And it was so intense that even though I thought I was prepared for it, it scared the death out of me, and I ended up just completely coming completely out of, you know, the whole state, what all together. And I came so close a couple times, but just did not make the actual separation.
Right. Oh, it's very powerful in the beginning. It's very scary. It was very scary for me, at least.
But, yes, it was for me, too. I mean, even getting that aspect, and that's not even projecting yet. So, but it's something that excites me and something I hope I can eventually do. And I'll just, keep at it until I can finally do it. So.
Right. Well, I think another way to approach it is through the dream state and trying to become lucid while dreaming.
Right, right.
Which is basically the same type of thing as an out-of-body experience, just kind of you're not quite as aware.
Right.
Yeah. So have you had other psychic, you had no psychic experiences growing up at all?
Not really. When I was doing, let me rewind here a little bit. A couple years ago, when I really started to, this every single day I was sitting there trying to project. I've kind of since slacked down a little bit. I still attempt here and there, but not every day like I was. There was one day I had woke up, and I was at my other house, and I had just woke up, and I was just laying there. I was just very relaxed, and I wasn't asleep. I had just woke up, and I heard a female voice in the house say my name, almost like she was standing right in my room with me. And I rose up out of bed. I knew it wasn't my wife's name, and my two sons were downstairs. And it was as real as you and I talking on the telephone right now. And
wow.
She said, "Stephen," just real bluntly and almost forcefully, and I rose straight up out of bed. I mean, she was obviously trying to get my attention, but other than that, we had an investigation back in the summertime. We were at a location in Murphy Center for the Arts, an investigation we were doing at a historical location, and I heard some residual noise with just my ears. I didn't even need the recording devices. Residual noise. It sounded like, and it was, this place was completely empty. It sounded like daytime dizziness, like pots and pans clanging and people moving up and down the hallways. And, the place served as a post office in one stage of its existence. And it sounded like a post office. It was just an amazing thing. I mean, it's just, but other than that, I've really never had any psychic experiences. Just a couple clairaudient experiences. I have been touched before at home. I had something grabbed my leg three different times one night. It was the only time it's ever happened to me when I was at the other location. But other than that, no, I really haven't had anything that I would really deem as psychic as far as myself is concerned.
Well, this is a little bit out of left field, but it might be related. What about UFO sightings?
I firmly believe in UFOs. Absolutely, I believe in UFOs. I said one time, I told the group, I'd really love to get our group into that aspect of research too, but we've already got so much on our plate now. I think that'd be a little hard to tackle that aspect of it too. But and I wouldn't know where to begin. And we've had guests like Stan Friedman and David Cereda, who co-hosted Dan Aykroyd, him and his video. I forgot what it was called, but we've had numerous guests. A man from MUFON came on the radio one night. We try to really mix that in there too, because people, I think the population is, their awareness of it and their belief system in it, just like ghosts, is on the rise. I think there's more and more credible evidence coming out about the subject, and the government, I think they can only keep covering up for so long. Eventually, it might not be in our lifetimes. There will be a breakthrough eventually, on that. So.
Well, what prompted you to what moved you from, having your own personal experiences with the ghost to becoming, an investigator and founding this group, and which is, now growing so quickly and having such a, a big influence in your area?
Just my own drive for answers. The whole subject of the paranormal fascinates me as it does many others. And, I wanted to go in there on a first-hand basis and document every aspect of it we could, and use every research tool imaginable to try to go in and validate this stuff for myself. I've had questions all my life I needed answers to. Lost a father at the age of 14. He had a massive MI when I was in my early teens, and grew up with one parent. And I've always wanted answers, and a lot of stuff I guess I do stems around hopefully maybe I'll communicate with him again one day. Yeah, because it came so sudden, there was never any goodbyes involved or any preparation or any of that kind of stuff. So, working in healthcare, I can see I'm not the only person that has to go through that, sudden death of a loved one, and it's nice to know that, there are other ways to communicate with those on the other side, and that there is another side.
Absolutely. Well, I'm right there with you. My mom died suddenly, and it was when I was a teenager, 19 actually. But it was one of the driving forces for me getting into this whole field as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think we all have our own reasons, and a lot of times I think it has to do with, you know, not just questions, but I think a lot of people that I have to talk to, and a lot of my friends that do this, you know, in various areas of the country, you know, either it's the things that have gotten them into it is either personal experience of their own that drive them for more answers, or the fact they had loved ones that they would eventually love to communicate with, you know, and the subject goes, I mean, as you know, is on the rise. I mean, it's all over television now, and people writing about it and doing movies on it, and, you know, there's more and more television shows coming out that are, you know, on the various different networks that cover the subject, and it's something that's very popular, and it obviously drives a lot of interest with the population.
Right. Well, it's very exciting. It is getting very popular, I agree. I think it's finally becoming mainstream, and we're going to hopefully get to the point where people accept this as real and we can throw some real funding towards it.
Right, I agree. Yeah, I mean, for too long, it's been, you know, there's been a mockery of it, and, you know, there's, you know, ups and downs in the paranormal community with, you know, different organizations and stuff, some that give it bad names, others that, you know, on the other side that have done, you know, very reputable and have done excellent things as far as the research are concerned. But, you know, and I agree, I hope it eventually gets to a point where there is more funding for the subject, where they can get to the bottom of more answers for it.
In your own group, Tennessee Paranormal, were you able to gather a bunch of like-minded people around you then? And how did you find them? Did you run into, like, you know, people who were skeptical or?
Well,
the ridicule factor and all that.
Most of my group is actually family-based. When I started it up and I told them I was going to do it, they came into it, I think, initially with just the interest in, ooh, I might be able to see something. And it is, you know, eventually turned into, you know, them being very good researchers themselves. Now, we do have other people, and actually most of the people that are not family-related that are in my group are healthcare workers, like myself. We've got nurses, another therapist in our group, even had a physician that wanted to group up with us that is fascinated with this subject, you know, and that has had experience of his own after some of his patients have died. But, you know, I get many, many requests for people joining the group, and I'm very cautious about who I bring on. You know, you always have to be real careful on who you take into investigation, take into people's homes, things like that. And I screen everybody as closely as I can. But, you know, I have an application on our website for group members, and I mean, they constantly come in. I've got just a stack of them right now, you know, of people that are wanting to, you know, get involved in the active investigations. But I keep the group to 7 or 8 usually when we go to a location and try to keep it small like that at the locations, even though we've got, you know, it's over 800 members on the website now. And most of those people are actively involved in our forums and, you know, everything else that we do. So, but, you know, eventually maybe we can grow a little bit larger. We can take on more people, but right now, I prefer to keep it small and controlled the way it is.
All right. Well, it's a good sign that it's popular and that people are interested.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How common do you think the paranormal is? You know, I mean, has it been hard for you to find cases that need investigating? Or do people contact you or do you contact them?
Well, both, actually. This year, it's been one of our heaviest years. In fact, I've farmed out a few different cases to other groups that are out here in our area, because we just couldn't take them on all of them, you know, some of which are, you know, businesses. We've had several residences, things like that, you know, and as you know, I mean, after you do an investigation, it usually takes our group to really fine-comb every little piece of evidence from the audio and the video and the photographs, usually in upwards of 2 to 3 weeks of consistently going over every bit of that, you know, especially if we have every investigator doing audio, video recording, photographing, all that does stuff. I mean, we come out of there with a lot of footage that we have to go over, and we want to make sure we give as close attention as we can for every home and business owner. But, you know, both. I mean, we started out contacting other people, other locations, historic locations. That's where our passion is historical places with history that, you know, have a lot of significant stories attached to them. But, you know, here lately, I mean, as far as like home investigations, those are ones that are requested. And we've had businesses that have started requesting as well. So, you know, we get a little mix of both.
All right. Very interesting. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. And tonight, we're talking about Tennessee Paranormal. The founder of this group is Stephen Wren, and this group conducts free investigations for Tennessee homes and business owners who are experiencing the unexplained. And there's a website if you want to learn more about this group. It's www.tnparanormal.com, all one word. And this is a call-in show, so I want to remind listeners that if you'd like to call in and ask our guest a question or give a story or have a comment, we'd love to hear from you. I'm going to give out the toll-free number right now. It's 888-228-4494. I'll give that out again in case you didn't have time to get your pen, so get it now. Here it is. It's 888-228-4494. Give us a call. We definitely love having callers. Okay, now, Stephen, you've written some books, or at least one so far. You want to tell us a little bit about, you know, that whole experience and what the book's about?
Absolutely. The first book, it's Jeremiah Bloom, Man of the Siren, as you opened up there with. It's the story of a youth. He's 15 years old, and it's set back in the kind of the pirate era, back in the early 1700s, and he encounters, you know, the loss of his own father and lots of paranormal adventures, swashbuckling adventures. You know, it's kind of a book about pirates and the paranormal, but it's based around the story of a 15-year-old boy and his quest for, well, I can't give that part out, but it's... trying to think of a good way to word this here. It's just primarily just it's based around a youth facing pirates and the paranormal. Let me just put it that way. But I put in a mix of all different paranormal aspects. I mean, I talk about orbs, shadow ghosts, apparitions. Oh gosh, you name it. I've pretty much got it in there. There is one experience there where he has an out-of-body experience himself. You know, but it's, and in the second book that'll be coming out, I mean, there's even more paranormal stuff, even more so than the first one that's out there, so.
All right. Well, it should do really well, I mean, based on just how interested people are in the paranormal.
I've had great feedback on it so far, so came out, and I've had wonderful feedback. I just had a staff writer from one of our local papers out here did a full cover story on their Lifetime section. Our lifestyle section of the one of our papers out here on it, and she did a wonderful job on that paper that she did on the article. But I've gotten great feedback on it, and it's, you know, that's in itself the most rewarding. I mean, it's self-rewarding just to be able to write a book. It's just something I've always done. I've got many, many manuscripts that I've started and then got tired of them, or I didn't feel they were good enough, or lost interest in the subject that I was doing, and you know, went on to the next one, and it's just. Or, you know, the kind of the repetitive cycle. You know, you being a writer yourself, I'm sure you've been in my shoes before with that. So, but this is something, you know, and I had the baseline for the story written a few years ago, and it sat on the shelf for a long time. And then the more I got involved in the paranormal, I realized, hey, I could really blend this well with the story that I've already got, and kind of rewrote the whole thing within about a year and a half, and just kind of went on from there. And it's, you know, now I've got the second book, you know, fully underway, and it's, you know, the whole storyline is written out for the entire series, which is correct. It's slated for three books right now, and I'm excited about it. I mean, it's been more so than anything just very self-rewarding, you know, and I hope in the meantime I can pick up some readership and actually have some people enjoy the story along with myself, so.
Right. Well, I have to congratulate you. I mean, getting
a book put
together is not an easy task. And
but before we get off here later tonight, give me an address and I will get you a copy as well. I usually do that. I didn't even think about that. I've had so much going on here lately. I apologize about that, but I will get you a copy out.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, that'd be great. So, are you planning on writing any other books about, like, the paranormal, perhaps?
Yes, I am. I've got a few different ideas, actually, in the work. I've got a couple storylines already written out. But I'm going to finish this series first before I tackle another one. I've got another show kind of for young readers, another book that's kind of already underway, but it's, you know, it's not really paranormal related. It's more, I've got two children, one being an early teen, and I've got another one that's 6 years old. So, you know, it's, I find things that fascinate them that kind of pique my interest in writing about things. And, you know, I'm hoping to have that one done sometime next year also.
All right. Well, if you want to write a book called Tennessee Ghosts, I bet you I know a publisher that would take it. This is the publisher I'm working with. I'm right now Schiffer Books.
Schiffer Books.
Right.
I had actually thought about doing that before, talking about some of the locations we've been at and the history associated with them and the evidence we've collected and things. You know, I know there's other books out there on ghosts in Tennessee, but I think I could hit it from a different aspect. But, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I would
definitely be interested in also pursuing that.
I'll have to give you some information on it, because they're the biggest publishers of regional ghost books right now, and they're really looking for authors to write about regional. Oh, yeah. And,
I did not know that. Great information.
Oh, yeah. It's practically a shoe-in. I mean, I don't want to say that, but you know what I mean. They really are hot for the topic.
Okay, well, I appreciate the, absolutely, that would be wonderful. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of these cases that you've gone on and investigated. And what interests me more in a way than the private homes is the businesses, because, you know, a lot of businesses are kind of sensitive about even advertising that they're having a problem with the
paranormal. Yeah, I find that true in some respects. Just like last week, I got an email from a woman. I was actually in the hospital as a patient myself when I got this email, so I forwarded it on to our case manager. But, in this case, which we have not investigated this location yet, in that aspect, that is true, because she was saying that, and she was very protective about it, and she said that it was not only interfering with her, she didn't say what kind of business it was, but not only was it interfering with their clients that were coming in, it was interfering with their personal life. And this is a location that's close to us. And yes, I think in many accounts that is the case. There are organizations or businesses that are very protective about that, and they want it kept very private. But on the other hand, I think there's other locations, like historic locations, people that have advertised, that they have had witnesses and stuff, which, you know, they can increase, you know, tourism and sales and stuff like that through. Center for the Arts being one of those that we recently investigated, you know, and it helps draw money in for some of these locations. So I think having evidence to help support the claim of ghosts, which, you know, many people are keen on the fact that it draws interest of the public, and, you know, they want an investigation. And we've done a couple different locations that are actively, you know, or openly, rather, you know, about the activity they've had with the people that come through there. And it does help draw extra people in there, which draws, you know, more sales at the door and more tourism and stuff. So I think you can get it from both respects.
So what is your theory on ghosts? I mean, there's different theories. Some people say it's residual type echoes, and some say it's spirits or both, or even poltergeists.
I think it's both. You know, poltergeist activity, I always understood poltergeist as a spirit being in a house that, manipulates objects, throws objects, things like that. You know, I lean more towards the theory that it is, you know, a lot of times associated with a preteen and the energy surrounding them and how their emotions and their energy affect certain things. You know, and I think the incidence of it is very rare, but I think it does happen that way. But as far as ghosts, I think you can have intelligent, and I think you can have residual activity both, because we've seen both of it. I mean, like, for instance, Center for the Arts, for example, I keep talking about this place. You know, they keep hearing footsteps walking across the floor. You know, if they have the same thing happen over and over, at the same time of day, every at the same day of the week, you know, or whether it be every day or every day of the week, you know, right. I think something like that is like residual activity. It's like an imprint in time at that location. Same thing with we did a bed and breakfast at the Thomas House in Red Bull in Springs, Tennessee, a couple years ago, and they had had similar experiences of the footsteps, which you hear a lot in a lot of different places. A lot of times that can be debunked. This place, we could not debunk it, but, you know, and then they had a man whistling, kind of an old tune. You know, this place has a lot of history surrounding it, too. It began in the 1890s is when it was originally constructed, and it was an old tune, the whistle, because it's an elderly woman that runs it, a man whistling almost like he's working, you know, and it's the same kind of whistle every single time, and it's at the same time of day, and, you know, numerous people have been able to claim they've heard it, you know, which helps validate that. And then you've got other situations where, you know, you can ask a spirit at a location if it can make a noise, and you get tapping on the wall or, you know, clinking or something, or on the EVP again. You know, you can ask a question if it answers you directly and it comes in at a range below the human vocal or below human hearing, and it comes through, and it's a, you know, especially a Class A EVP, you know, it helps really verify. I mean, I think you can get both.
Well, back to EVP, did you see that movie White Noise?
I did, and that ironic, funny you say that. That is actually what one of the things that really stemmed my interest in it when that movie came out, because when watching that and seeing they were doing EVP, I think they were doing a little bit of ITC in that also. The ITC I've never tackled, but the EVP part of it, you know, that's one of the things that was really driving me to see, you know, I started researching it, and most of the stuff I was finding was people claiming that it was real and showing their own evidence. So I was like, okay, I've got to see this for myself. So I think I went out and bought a cheap little digital recorder and a microphone and, you know, started going out. And like I said, I didn't get anything at first. But once I started getting voices, I started getting them all the time. And, you know, actively doing it, I mean, it was obsessive for me. I mean, I had to get to a point where I had to make myself stop doing it. But I was doing it so much, and I think that's what caused the activity I was talking about in my own house.
Right. Well, did you, you know, some people that I've talked to who have done it have, I haven't done a lot of research into EVP. Well, I've done research, but I haven't actually experimented with it personally. But several people have told me that when they've done it, they've had cursing come through. Have you had a problem with that? People?
No, I have not. No, I've had. I personally have not had anything negative come through. You know, I've seen groups that, you know, and I wonder sometimes these people that are getting the cursing, you know, if they are not taunting it in some way. You know, I think you need to show respect whenever you do this. You need to do it with caution and respect both. But I've seen, you know, especially I'm not going to say the name of the group, but there's some things on television where they really go and taunt, and then it's almost like they're mean to these spirits. And I think you need to treat them like people, show them some respect. And, you know, I can't necessarily say for these people that have gotten cursing, you know, they might have been doing everything completely honestly and as professionally as they possibly could, and they might still get cursing, but I personally have not captured any cursing myself. I have had people submit me EVPs to validate them that there was cursing on. Now, I have had a few. One of the first locations I ever investigated, in fact, all I did, the only equipment I had at that time was just a recorder, and it was a family friend that had, now this woman is very open. She is definitely psychic. She has proved herself in many different ways, and her husband both are very open to everything, which kind of makes them an open door anyway, and they had a house that they were, the televisions were turning themselves on and off in the different rooms. She was seeing apparitions. She's had out-of-body experiences herself. And I went over there to do a recording session in their home. And all I had, like I said, all I had was a recorder on me at the time, and I took a White Noise CD with me. Now, when I first got there, they were waiting for their neighbor to get there so that her husband or her kids could leave while we conducted this little, I guess you call it a semi-investigation. And I was real skeptical because I just felt completely comfortable in their house, and it didn't seem like anything abnormal. It was an older home, but, you know, I was just, again, real skeptical anything was going to happen in there. Well, I turned on White Noise in the house, and we played for about 15 minutes. And to this day, I have never been in a location that had literally come alive like it did in her house that night. I went from the state of being completely calm and comfortable to so on edge. I mean, I felt like the room, I've never been in a location that has been that heavy. The air has been that heavy. It was like a light switch when I turned the white noise on. And I used it, you know, most of the time I just use that now as a tool to try to help, you know, raise the energy in the air for a little bit before we do like an EVP session or something. We don't use it all the time, just every once in a while. But we had, I mean, a multitude of things coming across EVPs that night. Her VCR turned itself off and on right in front of me. You know, nothing else in the room turned off power-wise. The VCR did turn itself on and off. I did not see either the television do that. But we had a voice of a little boy come across. We did have a woman that came across. And like, going back to where you said, do you have anybody cursing? No. I have had them tell me answers like, we're not going to tell you whatever, you know, or you shouldn't be doing this. That was the one I got one time. And, you know, that really kind of made me sit there and think for a minute. But
clearly? Right, and you could hear that perfectly clearly?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I did, yes. And but there was this one, I asked the question, can you tell us your names? And there was an older woman that came across, and she said, we won't tell. And it's as clear as they do. I've got it on the website somewhere in all the different archives with the EVPs. But, you know, I got that one. And then the one that really disturbed me the most at that location is I had a girl, young female, come across, and she says, hey, it's me. It's me. And when I was going back and listening to the audio on that, I was just astounded how many, so, because a lot of times you go to a location, you're doing good if you get one or two EVPs. You know, and it's, I just got a handful of them from that one location that one night at her place, and it, you know, just the heaviness of the room, I felt like I was standing in a crowd of people. I felt it all around me. And like I said, to this day, even some of the craziest locations we've been in, I've not felt that uncomfortable. And but I had the girl that came across said, hey, it's me, it's me. It literally sent chills down my spine because it was the same voice of the same female that kept coming across when I was doing a recording at my house. I wasn't getting different voices. I was getting one voice of a young girl that kept coming across. And I've got one on the website, and Todd Bates from Haunted Voices had actually cleaned it up for me. It was before I was really cleaning them really good. But it says, help me now. And she had come across in other EVPs also and stuff in my house. But I knew the voice. I mean, just like somebody you know. I mean, you hear it so much. When I heard that, I literally froze. I had chills running down my spine. I just had to take a break from even listening to the evidence for a minute. You know, and it's just, that showed me that they can definitely attach themselves, however they do that, and travel from place to place and actually follow you from place to place. You know, I was about 99% sure that was the same voice of the same female that was coming across my house, and we were having all that craziness going on here.
So what's, like, the longest message you've gotten through EVP? I mean, is it normally just short little clips and phrases?
I'm trying to think if I've ever had anything really long. Most EVPs that we have ever captured, and I've heard very few even besides ourselves. I've asked that question before, too. You know, what is the longest EVP? Ours are usually, I'd say at the very most, maybe 5 seconds. You know, they're very quick. And I don't know if that's contributed to the amount of energy they have to communicate. You know, I don't know what factors are involved as far as the way they communicate. If it is energy related, do they need a lot of energy to do that? I tend to lean that way because of the fact that when you go into locations and you have, being a paranormal researcher yourself, you know this, you know, you have energy that will drain itself. I mean, fully charged batteries that are drained quickly, equipment that's drained real quickly. You'll have even electrical devices that malfunction or work half-heartedly. And, you know, it's, so I think a lot of it is energy related. I mean, it is, I believe we are energy. I think once we, you know,
that's true, right,
separate from this physical shell and death, I think that is what is left is energy, you know, and it's, I firmly believe in that, so.
Well, have you noticed if there's any difference in how successful EVP is based on the equipment you're using, like audio or digital recorders or, you know, super sensitive ones or cheap ones? Does anything work?
I use it. My most success, we've got a multitude of different recorders we use. I haven't had a whole lot of success with the analog, the old tape recorders, but I really haven't focused a whole lot on that. I started out with digital. That's where my first results came from, so it's kind of something I've always kind of stuck to. Now, I know there's some people, researchers out there, that swear religiously by using analog only. I tend a little more towards the digital just because I've gotten that. Now, I've got an Olympus recorder that I have gotten the best EVP captures that I use, that I have captured up to this point. We've got Panasonic, Sony's, all different brands out there. And I think anything will eventually capture if you are persistent enough with it. But my Olympus that I use has been the best one for me. It's the first recorder I got a few years ago, and it's been the best. I mean, it's been my best friend. I mean, he has come through and, captured some of my best ones that I've done. So.
Right. Well, when you go to a haunted location, are you going with the intention of clearing the home of the ghost or the business, or do you just...
No, we do not. Yeah, we go to validate. Cleansing is not something I would necessarily... I don't know if we will ever get involved in aspects of it or not. I usually, if I'm at a location and we can validate there is something going on, that there is another organization out here that I refer to, and in fact, they did one for me just about several weeks ago, actually, of a location that there was demonic type-related complaints of. So they went in and did the investigation, and they went back actually with a priest, and they do cleansing themselves. They actually took a priest with them, so I'm not sure. I have not gotten an update yet on exactly what they captured when they're out there, but they felt it was strong enough to bring a priest in and do the cleansing instead of themselves. But we have not ever attempted to do cleansings. I don't think we ever will. Our primary purpose and focus is just going in to validate or debunk, the reports that are coming through.
Right. Well, you mentioned demonic. Have you run across anything in your investigations that was really scary, like that case you just mentioned?
There's been a few different locations we've been at where the homeowner or business owner complained of something demonic related. I think there's, me personally, I think a lot of Hollywood movies and stuff like that really tie into a lot of, people's mindsets and their background thinking when something's going on that is automatically negative or something evil because it's behind, what's going on.
Right.
I tend to pull away from that thought a little bit. I'm a little more open-minded about it and think that, even if you've got something that's happening, whether if people are being pushed or slapped or, might not necessarily be something demonic. It might just be a negative energy. It could have been a grumpy old person, and I think as in life, as in death, it might just be a disgruntled spirit, for whatever reason. And maybe they don't want you there. I do believe there can be cases of the demonic hauntings. In fact, they say demonic hauntings are actually on the rise. But in the locations we've been at where there have been complaints of demonic hauntings, we have not been able to validate any of that. We did a residence in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is about 45 minutes from where we're located at, where they were complaining of sulfur smells. The wife in the home was complaining of incubus-type activity with her, just a multitude of different complaints, and all of it was very negative-related. And we went in there and really captured absolutely nothing when we were there. The only thing that happened at that location, which wasn't negative, is the bedroom door kept closing on me every time I went into it, and it would stay open any other time. And I tried pressing on it, pressing on the floor, doing this, that, trying to see what was causing that room to close, the door to close. But, I'm still skeptical that it was anything. I think it might have been something explainable, but as far as really validating something negative, no. And, this home investigation we did a couple weeks ago with the pentagrams being outside, they also had complaints of demonic-type activity, which would be classified as demonic, but we could not validate that there either. We did capture a couple of EVPs, but nothing that I would really consider demonic. But, as you can go to a location that's haunted, and on the nights you go, it might require several investigations to really get to the bottom of it, because it just might not be active the night you go. But when we were there was nothing. Now, we did have a couple of group members that became nauseated and kind of weak-legged, which is the first time that's ever happened to them when they were in there. I felt completely fine the whole night. the family friend that was there with him, you know, like I said, we do not do cleansings, but she burned a, oh gosh, I keep drawing blanks tonight. One of the tools you use when you're trying to cleanse a home is she was, a bundle of like sage. What are those things called?
Oh, well, I know what you're talking about. Like, you know, sage. People do use sage to cleanse homes.
Yeah, and that is actually the first time I've ever even seen that being used. She brought that in the house, and it was so strong. I mean, I just felt my chest tighten close. But other than that, I mean, it's just, I think that was the only result from her using that night was the effect on my lungs. But, I didn't see smudge sticks. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
She was smudging there in the house, and you know, we really saw no increase in activity. We got nothing else. Really couldn't validate anything else after she had done that. But you know, it's besides the girl getting nauseated. I mean, no, I really wouldn't say that we've had any experiences that were really negative. I mean, no sulfur smells or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, they did have a priest go in this location before we went there. And he tried to do a cleansing, and they said several people were there when he was there, the priest from their local church. And they said as he was doing his, going through and reading different Bible verses, they all heard a high-pitched screaming coming from the upstairs area.
Wow.
And it was obviously, it shook him up so bad he refuses to go back and do it again. So, you know, and that's when they called us to try to get some extra help. But, you know, we did not experience that. I can't say that there's not something negative in the house. It's just we did not experience it when we were there.
All right. Well, do you bring in a psychic when you go in on these?
Well, we have one group that's, we have one person in our group that's very sensitive. He unfortunately was not able to go with us that night. I was really hoping he could do that, but with his work schedule, we weren't able to accommodate and be able to schedule around that. But, you know, maybe he would have picked up on something else. You know, it's the family friend that was doing the smudging. Now, she claims to be psychic. Me, personally, anytime somebody tells me they're psychic, I automatically, my skeptical alarm goes off. You know, I kind of want some proof, you know, because there's so many frauds out there that claim they're psychic. I want, you know, somebody that can really show some evidence that they do have the ability to do that. But, you know, David, the guy in our group that does it, he is, proved himself over and over again, and but the family friend that claims she is, she was saying there was a couple different spirits in the house. But again, you know, whenever I hear that, I do have a real skeptical side to me, even though I fully believe in every aspect of this. But there's a lot of people that just try to garner attention from it, and I, you know, those are the kind of people I'm a little weary of. So I'm somebody that likes proof. I like proof about everything. You know, even if it's the living,
right.
I want proof. So.
Well, I think that's the best way to approach this field in particular, you know, like as in all fields of, you know, research and science.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the only sensible way to go. I don't think just because you have somebody that's claiming they have activity, you need to go in with the mindset that, oh, let's go capture it, or let's, you know, get evidence on this ghost or this spirit, or, you know, however you want to coin it. You know, I think you need to go in with an open mind that, okay, yes, I get the sensation while I'm here. You know, if it's a location where you actually feel like something is there, you have the feelings of being watched, or the air being heavy or whatever. But again, it all rolls back to the evidence. I think you really need to focus on what's there. You know, is there something explainable that's causing this? You know, even though the house may be a little creepy itself, there might not be anything going on there. It might just be something completely explainable, plumbing, you know, electrical wiring problems. I mean, lots of different things can cause, you know, as you know, different.
Have you found that to be the case in some of your investigations?
Some of them, yes. You know, there some, you know, I think it's in older homes, you know, sometimes you get, and depending on the size of the house and how it was constructed, I mean, certain things that will, you know, cause it to shift a little bit where there'd be a lot of wind and you can hear the creaking or popping, you know, sometimes the plumbing can cause knocking in the walls. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's lots of different explainable reasons for things that people immediately, you know, want to just roll off as, oh, my gosh, my house is haunted, something's here. You know, yes, that can happen, but I think in a lot of cases it's absolutely nothing at all. So,
well, it's pretty interesting stuff, you know, and you've got a lot of interesting things to say. I would definitely think you should write a book. I totally think you should.
And it's, you know, and I have given that a lot of thought. It's funny you say that. I thought about even calling it Tennessee Paranormal, not just because of the website, but just, you know, just kind of a different approach to it. And just, you know, I'd really like to do, you know, try to get in some other locations out around here. I mean, there's a lot of history, even in Middle Tennessee where I'm located, and a lot of locations, you know, that we want to get in and, you know, really do some full investigations out there and try to capture as much evidence as we can and share that with people, you know, because it is a fascinating subject. And here, you know, just the history alone, reading about the history of a historical location, to me is great. I love stuff like that. But to actually back it up and just say, okay, on top of that, you know, you've got this, this, and this going on, and here's actually some evidence from this, this, and this, you know, and it's...
Exactly.
It's just, to me, it's just great. I love stuff like that. So.
Well, Stephen, you know what? Our time is pretty much up. We just have like a minute or two to wrap up the show. But,
okay.
It's been amazing. I really want to thank you for coming out of the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'd love to get you scheduled on our show. I mean, you've got enough. I was reading your profile, and I thought, looking at it this afternoon, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh, this guy would be a great guest on our show, you know, because you've done just about all of it. I mean, you know, and you know, congratulations on the success of your several books that you've got out. And I definitely plan on getting the one on your astral projection. Is it Out of Body Exploring, if I remember right?
That's right.
Is that the name
right.
of the book? Okay. Yeah, I will be getting that book. So I've got numerous books here on astral projection, like William Bowman's books and Robert Monroe. And I know y'all said y'all had him as a guest. When was it? Here recently, I think, did you say you had Robert Monroe on your show? Oh, I'm sorry, not Robert Monroe. But they're related to Robert Monroe. You, a woman from there, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I forgot he had passed. Excuse me for that. But I mean, it's just, yeah, but I definitely plan on getting that myself and having a look at that.
All right, well, I'll email you some information on this publisher, which I think will take a...
Oh, that would be great. And send your address along with that, and I will send you a book.
Cool. Sounds great. Well, thanks again, Steve. It's been great.
Well, Preston, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I appreciate you being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Now, you want to give out your website one more time before we say goodbye?
Yes, our organization's website is tnparanormal.com, and that's for our research group, and then the book actually has its own website, and it's Jeremiah Bloom, Bloom spelled BLOOM.com, JeremiahBloom.com. And there you can find information. We've still got quite a bit of stuff we're adding to it, but right now you can see the book and, you know, some information about the book and the characters and everything else on that website now. And, you know, we're going to get everything up there that, you know, as far as where you can purchase it and all that as well. So.
Very good. Well, sounds great, and I wish you the best of success on all your ventures.
Well, and the same to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd definitely love to be a guest on your show as well. That would be awesome.
Yeah, well, we will definitely arrange that. Not a problem at all.
Okay. All right, well, that's it for tonight. I want to thank everyone out there for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. And our guest tonight has been Stephen Wren, that's W-R-E-N, and we've been talking about this group that he founded, Tennessee Paranormal. And if you want to learn more about it, the website again is www.tnparanormal.com. Lots of interesting stuff there, and I'm hoping he's going to be putting out some more books soon. Well, that's it. Thanks all for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.